Friends, welcome. Good to see you tonight. I'm Sam. If you've not met me before, vicar here at Trinity. I love Regatta Week. We've been in Henley for, I think, 6 or 7 years, and I feel like I enjoy Regatta Week a little bit more every year. I love how international it is. And actually, before my favourite time is actually just before the regatta actually starts, when all the international crews arrive in town. It's just such a privilege, isn't it, to welcome people from around the world into our town. I love how competitive it is, and we normally take our kids down to the start line on the Saturday of Regatta Week, and they just love seeing the crews lining up, and the energy and the focus and the kind of nervous attention. It's wonderful, and I love how colourful it is as well. Where else do you get so many brightly coloured blazers in the same place? I don't know how you're feeling. It's been a long, sweaty day, end of the week, and this is just now time to just be still, to be quiet. Got half an hour or so. It's wonderful to have Alex here. We're going to be hearing a bit from him later on, we're recording the session tonight as well, so I know others will be engaging with tonight's session later on as well. We're going to begin with some words from the Bible. Psalm 46, the Psalms are the songbook of the Bible. And this psalm kind of engages with the chaos of life and offers a place where we can be still in the midst of it. So just a moment of quiet as we begin, and then you can join with the words printed in bold. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Up on the screen is this lovely verse from the Bible. It says, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. It's a tough call, isn't it? Not be anxious about anything. I wonder if any of us can say that we've managed that even for a day. But it gives us some great ways forward as well. Talk to God about it. And do that with thanksgiving. I found myself that thanksgiving is like a surprisingly effective antidote to anxiety. So we're going to just begin our time tonight actually with thanksgiving. I'm going to encourage us to just quietly bring before God in the quietness of our own hearts different areas that we can be thankful for, and just spend a bit of time quietly reflecting and being thankful. So as we begin, perhaps we can recall those people who we love, our family and our friends, and people who have influenced us positively, who have loved us, cared for us, steered us in the right direction. bring them to mind, and then after a moment's quiet personal thanks, I'll finish with the words, "Give thanks to the Lord for he is good," and you can respond, "His love endures forever." Give thanks to the Lord for he is good. His love endures forever. But now I just invite us to bring to our minds the opportunities in life that we have been given. And life may have been hard at times, but all of us have received opportunities that have made us the people we are today and led us to the places that we are today. And an opportunity now just to be thankful for those opportunities. Thanks to the Lord for he is good. His love endures forever. And finally, just an opportunity for us to be thankful for this amazing world that we live in. I mean, the river's amazing. A lot of activity on the river this week. But, you know, God didn't need to make a world with water that refreshes us. That we can do sport in, that we can clean ourselves with, and it's a miracle, it's a gift. And so many other things in life that we enjoy, we simply receive as gifts. And so just a moment again, just to recall things in this world that we love and we are thankful for. Give thanks to the Lord for he is good. His love endures forever. Amen. It's lovely to have Alex here. I'm going to invite Alex up to the front now. There we go. I'll just turn that one on for you. Now, these services that we've been enjoying this week, we've had different guests each week. And Alex, you're finishing off our lineup. We started with Debbie, who I think
unlucky.
I think it's very lucky. We started with Debbie, who I think is a good personal friend of yours.
Very good.
So, and you both got Olympic silver medals.
Yeah.
And you both lived in Henley for a long time.
For a very long time, yeah.
So, so it's nice to talk and tell. With that connection, but it'd be lovely if you would just love to hear more about your journey with rowing. When did it start? Where did it take you?
So thank you everyone for coming this evening. Lovely to be here in this very special week for all of us. Oarsmen, I can see some in the audience. Nice to hear. My journey with rowing started in 1994 when I was sent to a school down in Bath called Monkton Green School, and because of the very kindness of my parents over there who sat here this evening, partly because I was very naughty in America, I came to the school down in Monkton. It's a Christian school. The big five girl there, and they had a lovely little river called the Avon. And our rugby player and a very good friend of mine said, "Alex, you know, what are you doing next term after this term?" And I had no idea. There would be hockey and this thing called cricket, and I didn't know any of these sports that were in America. But we tried this thing called rowing, and I said, "Well, what is rowing?" And he said, "Brilliant, we got to go up to other places like London, and you get a row on this river, this big river, where they have things like floating shopping trolleys and all these sorts of things." And that was it. You know, I went to the river, I got in a boat, and that was it. That I was hooked. There's something about rowing, about the movement, the way that the blade moves through the water, the boat moves through the water, the rhythm of the flow, the movement of the rhythm of the flow of everyone together, the harmony. And it's a beautiful sport, and it makes you fit and healthy, and you have to really work together with everyone that you're rowing with. And it kind of really went from there, and I was very lucky that inspired by some great rowers from this country, like Gray Vincent in 1996, to want to go to the Olympics. And then I'm very grateful that God gave me the gift and the opportunity and the ability to pursue that dream and try to do something very, very well and have a lot of memories along the way.
So you start at school, you pop out of school, head off to uni somewhere?
Headed off to Oxford Brookes University.
Lots of rowing at Oxford Brookes.
Lots of rowing at Oxford Brookes.
And at what point does rowing kind of become professional?
It kind of became professional pretty much straight away. When I say professional, it became an obsession, really obsessive. I wanted to go to the Olympics, and I remember I was talking to my grandfather in the car coming back from Stoneleigh, a big Christian festival up in Stoneleigh, and Redgrave and Vincent had just won the Olympics, and my grandfather was this amazing, amazing man, and I said, "Grandad, you know, I really want to go to the Olympics." And it was this, we're driving back in his Astra estate with the dogs in the back, wet, stinking, in the darkness, and it was this biblical moment with this storm and lightning and thunder, and I said, "Grandad, I'm going to row," and Grandad, "Right." And then it was like this sermon came from the front of the car of how I would go on this journey, and he lit my imagination like Grandad could. And he was a missionary, a man of deep faith, and maybe it was
Wow, so he's obviously been a key influence in this journey as well. So you kind of pop out of university, you move to Henley at some point, you get involved in the GB rowing squads, and tell us about the kind of Olympic journey. When was your first Olympics? What was that all like?
I mean, it wasn't an easy journey, and I think this is a little bit intertwined with my faith, definitely. I went to Monkton Coombe School. I had a strong faith as a schoolboy, and certain things happened along the road that I was angry at God with. It was the death of a very close friend when I was young. I became quite confused, and I think I used rowing to mask a lot of my doubt, my confusion, by just focusing on rowing. Anyway, I went to university and rowing went very well for me very quickly. I got into the British team as a junior, and then I went to the under 23 system, and then I went to the World Championship. And it was all very successful very quickly, and it was this wonderful life that was just, you know, growing and growing and growing, and I was sort of like, "Thank you, God, that, you know, this is kind of me," and, you know, it was starting to be driven quite myself. And it distanced me from God a little bit. And then in 2004, I was going to the Olympics with Matthew Pinson, this hero of mine who inspired me to row. And And then I had this terrible injury just before going to the Olympics in 2004, and I was literally just before about to get on a plane to the Olympics here, actually, in Henley, was when I found out. And anyway, from then on, that, I don't know, it was very interesting. I became very angry at God, and even more obsessed with rowing and self. And self success, and that was, you know, it was great. It was very good for the rowing in that, but it definitely distanced me from people and family and things like that. And as I became, I love rowing. I think rowing is a wonderful sport, but I definitely think that when I faced some of these challenges in life. And I didn't understand. I definitely rejected God and blamed God, and didn't understand why God was making this happen in my faith. You know, I pushed it further and further away. And it's interesting. I became more successful in rowing. I won world championships. I went on to win silver medal at the Olympics in Beijing. And I always thought I was walking that journey with God, but I became less and less connected to God and more focused on me and myself and my success.
There's a line in the Lord's Prayer that says, thy will be done. I guess many of us might be kind of familiar with that, and often we kind of turn that into my will be blessed. You know, Lord, I want to win the Olympics, help me win the Olympics. Or, you know, Lord, I want this in life, give me that. And it's quite a different, it's easy, isn't it, to kind of go down the kind of my will be blessed and think you're kind of bringing some kind of connection with God. But actually, as you say, the real focus is maybe more on yourself. And I don't think it's just rowers, by the way. I think all of us can end up in that kind of a place. So, and your, so I guess your faith is pretty dormant. In this period of life, and then after you finish rowing, tell us a little bit about that journey, and then your journey eventually back to a kind of active Christian faith again. Where did that story take you?
I think there's something I want to pick up on before I go.
Sure.
I think what rowing, don't get me wrong, rowing is a wonderful sport. I think what sport is a wonderful thing to have in people's life. And you can have faith in sport. What's difficult in sport is to have faith to do God's will and to do your best, and to look at how you can live God's will to the best of your ability in everything that you do, and that is important, and not want God to help you achieve the outcome that you want. And because in sport there is a first place and there's a second place and a third place. In rowing in this country, your measure of success is pretty much just first. So it's very difficult to and actually the best way of achieving the best for yourself in the race is not to focus on the result, it's actually to focus on the process of doing the best of what you're supposed to do. I guess the reason I'm saying that is I didn't achieve what I wanted to achieve in sport, and I didn't achieve through some of the injuries and some of the things that happened in my life. And I got quite angry, like, that I wasn't achieving the things that I thought I deserved. Which led me down a path of trying harder and harder and harder to achieve the results that I wanted, driven by self, rather than what you were asking the question about, you know, what does it do to my faith? By going down that road of trying harder and harder and harder to achieve the outcomes that I wanted or what other people wanted me to achieve. Rather than focusing on what is God's will in what I'm doing, I became further and further distant away from the understanding trying to live God's will, or even look for what God's will was in my life, to the point where I became so driven by self-will, which became actually self-destruction and destructive for my relationships around me, and actually my faith almost became non-existent, to the point where I was trying so hard, and in a lot of ways it looked like I had everything that you'd want on the outside, whereas actually I was so completely lost on the inside, because I was trying to play God in my own life, rather than just ask God, what do you want me to do, and what is your will? And I wish I'd had this realization when I was clearer, and also earlier in my life. It's, you know, results are great, but sometimes it's the most difficult situations that we face that really aren't clear. And I've realized that recently in some really hard things, and losing a lot. But actually, that's where really looking for God's will in my life. What does God want me to do in this situation? When I really, really don't understand the outcome that I'm in, or the situation I'm in, it's actually one of the most beautiful things happen in my life. I hope that's clear.
I think you put it very eloquently, actually. And these are deep. We all have kind of these are deep issues in love. And we paper over them so often, don't we? We put the blazer on and we go out and enjoy the sunshine and we just pretend everything's just fine. But actually most of us have these deeper places that we end up at some point. And where do you turn? What do you do? And you're right, eventually if you just turn inwards, you run out of resources very quickly. And you end up, I think, you know, you're worth pretty lost as a result. I guess you're putting words probably in all of our mouths to some extent. Yeah.
I spent a lot of my time, of my life, even when I was running, asking the question, often shouting the question, you know, God, who am I? Like, who am I? Who am I? I'm just this rower, successful rower, you know, everything. Husband, you know, I was a successful friend, I was a popular person, but I, who am I? I still, you know, when I stopped rowing, who am I? Who am I? And I was trying to dictate what I thought that should be. And you and I, you know, started speaking about 15, 16 months ago. And actually, it was at that point because I'd spent the best part of 20 years doing very successful things, but actually becoming more and more lost, and living further and further away from God. And eventually I got on my knees, not who am I, but what do you want me to do? What is your will? I'll do anything. And it was a complete shift. It was a complete shift. It doesn't really matter who I am or what I'm wearing or what I'm doing. God has a plan, and if I just look for what his plan is and what is his will and try to live with kindness and love and grace and forgiveness.
All these things that Jesus kind of says, this is the way, follow me. And was it 2 months ago, Alex, that we headed out, kind of waded out into the Thames together, and you were baptized, and that was, I suppose, whenever anyone gets baptized, it's like the end of a process. It's like the end of like exploring, it's saying, this is who I am and this is where I'm going. But it's also the beginning of the process, as we say, now I want to walk with Jesus and follow his way. And I don't know if you've got any reflections on that whole process of like getting to that point and how that's been, you know, the kind of, I suppose, the change that you've experienced as that's been more central in your life.
Well, I can tell you for free, if you'd asked me a year ago, would I be sat in Trinity Church on the Friday evening of Henley Royal Regatta at 6:29, I could tell you the answer would be no way. And you and I sat down, 16 months ago, and we sat down, and I said to you, and I said, Sam, I, you know, that's it. You know, I, there's only one way in life for me. I need to live God's life. I need to live God's will in my life. The change in my life seemed insurmountable. It seemed like it was such a drastic difference of how I lived every day.
Mm.
It seemed almost impossible.
Mm.
And still, but you said to me, Alex, it's not the destination, it's the direction of travel. God wants us, it's the direction of travel. And did I even think that moment when you spoke about you being baptized in the river, you know, in April, March?
It was cold. Yeah, it was cold.
Never. I guess the message I want to give anybody who hears that in doubt and wondering, you know, how to live God's will in your life, it's really difficult.
Yeah.
Right? Particularly as it gets better.
Yeah.
Actually, as it gets better and better is when it's harder to live God's will, because you want it. That it's really easy at that point to want it to go the way that you think you want it to now go, because it's better. It's not such a disaster. When everything's a disaster, it's great. You can just go, God, just help me. I'll do whatever you want. You know, but when it's good, you go, oh God, I quite like this bit over here. Sure. So, you know, I'd like to keep having this. I'll do a little bit of that, but I could, like, you know, keep having this. And that's the bit where actually you have to surrender and look at God's will more and more and more. And to think that at this point over here, that you can be able to do that over here, seems impossible.
Mm.
But actually, it just happens a little bit at a time.
Yeah. Oh, Alex, I mean, I feel like we could talk all evening, but we're going to have to draw things to a close. And we're all on a journey, right? I mean, this is the thing I love about church. It's just like, come as you are, wherever you're at, and we'll just like take a few steps wherever you happen to be, take a few steps maybe further on. You're on the journey, I'm on the journey, we're all on the journey. But it's lovely to hear how that's been working out for you just recently, and it's so kind of you to come and share tonight. So you can just give Alex a bit of a round of applause and thank you. You just take that one off and then get around and see, right? Perfect. Thank you. Just wanted to reflect on a few of those ideas actually, just for a moment together. You know, I always thought I was average kind of type until I moved to Henley. And then you're kind of like, and Regatta Week just makes it infinitely worse. I've been out in kind of down at the start of the regatta this week, just greeting people, saying hello, inviting people to stuff. And like my neck is just like constantly craned up at 45 degrees. So to make me feel better about myself, I thought we'd look at an account in the Bible of a famously short person called Zacchaeus. But we'll see that he connects with some of the things we've been kind of chatting through with Alex, because here is a man in the Bible who undergoes a radical transformation. So turn with me, and we'll just read the story. To page 59, and then I'll just draw out a couple of observations as we do that. So, again, if you want to follow along, this is page 59 in these little booklets, and just right at the bottom there. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." Then Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." And Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost." It's a great story. It's the personal story of this guy who's a kid. But it's also the story of what Jesus has come to do for all of us. This is why he, in his own words, for the Son of Man, he's just talking about himself there, came to seek and save the lost. That's what he's all about. I don't know if Zacchaeus, by the way, thought that he was lost, but that's how Jesus saw him. Zacchaeus is wealthy, he's influential, he's made lots of enemies in his role as a tax collector, he's a cheat. Perhaps he saw that as making tough decisions to get ahead in life, but everyone else saw him as a sellout, and certainly not worth their time. And so when Jesus comes, I mean, they're hardly exactly making a way for him, are they, to see him, has to kind of shoot up the tree instead. Not worth their time, and as far as they're concerned, not worth Jesus' time either. Right, so everyone else looks at Zacchaeus and they see it like a deeply unlikable man. Jesus sees Zacchaeus as someone who needs finding and loves him enough to do exactly that. And Jesus takes all of the initiative in this account. So it says, verse 5, it says, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." Right, and Zacchaeus, all he does is he responds to the invitation. And it changes him forever. Being welcomed by Jesus profoundly changes him. That's what he does, the hardest thing for any of us to do. He gives his money away. As you know, someone's really been paying, they part with their money. He gives it away. All the stuff that it dishonestly got for himself, I don't know if it's his identity, his sense of worth, his sense of self, he just says, "I don't need it anymore because I've just been welcomed by Jesus." It's a personal story of Zacchaeus, but as I said, it's also the story of what Jesus has come to do for all of us. Right? The Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. When Jesus looks at us, he sees that we are lost, and he loves us. And he says, "I've come to find you. In fact, I'm so committed to finding you that I'm going to die on a cross and pay for all the rubbish, all the sin, all the mess. And I'm going to step into your life. I'm going to change you. I'm going to welcome you back." Sometimes we feel lost. Right, you know those 3 a.m. mornings when you wake up and you just think, "What am I doing?" You know, the questions Alex was asking, like, "Who am I? You know, what is it all about?" Yeah, sometimes we feel lost. Sometimes we look lost. And you can see it in people's eyes, can't you? The kind of empty sense of hopelessness. You see that? You wonder what's going on. Sometimes we act lost. Right, and we make terrible decisions. We do things that we deeply regret. And we wonder if there's any way back from them. That's all because, actually, Jesus says, all of us, at a deep spiritual level, are lost. That's why we feel lost. That's why we sometimes look lost. That's why we act lost, because we are lost until
Jesus comes to find us, and we, like Zacchaeus, welcome him into our homes. And you know, I don't know anyone who has sincerely done that and hasn't had their life changed, even Zacchaeus. Perhaps even you as well. The Son of Man, Jesus, came to seek and to save the lost. Andy is going to sing for us. It's a lovely song, picks up on some of these ideas. I hope it might just be a moment of quiet to think and reflect a little more just before we close our time this evening. Thank you, Andy.